Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Excited about today's guest, my friend Christian Toto of Hollywood in Toto and The Daily Wire. He is a writer for conservative outlet The Daily Wire, and he also reviews Hollywood films, TV shows, and media from a conservative viewpoint. He is cutting. He is fierce and strong. He is intelligent. He is witty, and he is deep thinking, and I love this guy. I wanted to bring him on to talk about my recent Facebook jail experience, but we're also going to review some films and some TV shows as well. Talk about woke culture, cancel culture, raising kids in that environment, and the left-wing vice grip on the media, and maybe even the role China plays. That's all coming up in our conversation. First of all, I want to thank Louisville Cabinets and Countertops for their help with our program. You guys know that I only talk to you about businesses and companies that I actually believe in. That's the case with Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. Why do I believe in them? Because they did our kitchen when we lived in Louisville. We enjoyed it for several years, and then when we sold the house, I believe that it was instrumental in selling the house in 8 hours because it was beautiful. So that's why I stand by them, and I want you to use them. If you're thinking about remodeling your kitchen, if you're a contractor and need cabinets right away, they've got some in stock. If you're a do-it-yourselfer and you just want to go down there and pick up the cabinets that you need, got your measurements, go take it out, they can do that. They are local and affordable and high quality. But if you want a turnkey kitchen model experience, they got that for you too. Three designers on staff. They're at 6200 Hit Lane, right on the border of Oldham County and Louisville. So if you're in Louisville, Oldham County, or Southern Indiana, Louisville Cabinets and Countertops is your choice for kitchen remodel. And you can go to LouisvilleCabinetsandCountertops.com or 502-930-3304 and just tell them Leland sent you because I love them and I appreciate their support of our program. And by the way, their support of our program allows me to continue to do this labor of love and keep you informed on all kinds of fun and cool topics. And it allows me to do that without having to do other weird ways of monetizing it. So we definitely appreciate Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. So now, let's get to our conversation with the great Christian Toto. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I don't even know how to describe that answer. I mean, I can't. I'm woozy. I'm dizzy. I could use some sleep. But otherwise, I'm fine.
HollywoodinToto.com. That's the website you need to go visit to see my buddy Christian Toto. Your website is awesome because you do a lot of reviews of Hollywood stuff. You do it kind of from a conservative point of view. And I wanted to turn to you because I had an interesting week this week, and you're kind of like my go-to media expert guy. But before we dive into me getting put in Facebook jail, I got to ask you about a post on your website. 15 fun facts from Three Amigos. Now, there's a reason why I'm pointing at this. What's your favorite fun fact from that classic movie, The Three Amigos?
Well, it was a casting decision that didn't happen. You know, I guess there's always people who could be in a movie, or maybe they get edited out at the last minute. But, I wrote this a while ago, so I'm pretty sure I got the name right. It's Sam Kinison was going to be in the film. Do I have that? I think I had that. It was, I kind of went all over the web and did some research, and I looked at the liner notes, so to speak, from the Blu-ray edition. So that's how I kind of researched all the data. But, go to my website, find that Three Amigos story. I think it's Sam Kinison, unless I'm having a senior moment. But there was a pretty interesting actor who could have been in the film but wasn't. And, I always find those little pieces of those tidbits fascinating. And, Sam Kinison's career, obviously his life was cut short. It was so curious. It's amazing to look back at it. But I always look at his tiny, tiny role in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield. And has an actor ever made more of an impression in, gosh, I'm going to say under 2 minutes? I mean, his scene in there is amazing. It's funny. It's crazy. It's off the wall. It's so outlaw-like,
right,
in a
comedic
point of view. And not only was it great then, but it's even greater now because we don't have that many moments in our culture now where it's outlaw comedy. pure and simple. So I don't know, he is missed today, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, when you look at comedy right now in the woke and cancel culture, I feel bad for those guys because being funny is to be irreverent. I mean, that's what funny is. Funny is almost 100% irreverence. I mean, that's what it is. It's even in a polite preacher joke, it's still irreverence. You know, it's maybe irreverence that most would consider acceptable with a clean, polite joke, but it's still irreverence. That's what funny is. Yeah. And you're right. It is Sam Kinison in your post because I've got it up right here.
And by the way, you know, the new Borat movie is kind of a great primer in – you know, back in 2006, Borat was outrageous and crazy and button pushing and new and fresh. And it kind of, you know, it had a little bit of candid camera in it, but it was scripted. And you know, Sacha Baron Cohen was just brilliant as Borat. Flash forward to now, the new Borat movie, it's all about like, oh, Trump is evil. We got to get that bad Mike Pence.
Right.
Could a comedian lose any more of his intellectual teeth than going after Trump in a very gummy, toothless way? I love Sacha Baron Cohen because of that movie, and I just think, wow, that's where he's come. That's what he's doing now in 2020. It's not a good movie, the new one. It starts strong and it kind of just goes nowhere. But it made me sad. Like, you know, I guess you can't always stay edgy forever. But just to see him in particular go down this predictable, safe, sane route, I just shrugged my shoulders.
Well, it's even worse than that, because didn't he give a speech at the ADL in which he called for people with whom he disagrees to be arrested? And to your point, here's a guy who made his bones off of being that irreverent in your face, and now suddenly he's just going to go virtue signal with the rest of them, you know? And it's like, what are you doing, man? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you know, part of the Borat shtick is that he is extremely anti-Semitic. It's played for laughs.
Right.
It's meant to be. He's from this backward culture.
Right. It's ironic.
Right. I think he may be a Jewish person. I don't even know. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
But you think he would want the freedom to kind of go in those directions and to be daring and outrageous.
Right.
And yet here he is sort of saying, well, Facebook, you can't have this ad and you can't have that ad. You know, doesn't he realize the slippery slope he's trotting on? I mean, this is what we need to have as a culture, free expression. Let the audience kind of suss out what's true, what's not. And I know it's a very tricky issue to figure out what Facebook or any platform should have on. But as we're seeing the last few months, it's very clear that they are not solid arbiters of what should be on a podcast or a format or a platform and what shouldn't. They are they're anti-conservative. It's very clear. And it's undeniable, and it's just sad that, you know, Cohen is going in that direction instead of, you know, just basically saying, hey, we need more free speech, not less.
Yeah. I mean, Hollywood is locked up. You know, it's really interesting. By the way, before we get into that, I've got some fun facts about Three Amigos, too, by the way.
Okay. Oh, nice.
So one of my best friends from high school and his sisters are in Three Amigos.
Huh.
So I grew up in Sells, Arizona, which is about 60 miles southwest of Tucson and about 40 miles southwest of a little place called Old Tucson. Old Tucson is a movie studio for Old West movies just outside of Tucson, Arizona. Three Amigos was filmed there. There are many shots in that movie that I recognize the area where they're riding their horses or the mountains in the background because I grew up around those mountains. And there's a scene when they first arrived in the town in Mexico, when the Three Amigos first arrived. There's a scene with a little boy leading a horse, little boy in a hat leading a horse to kind of a place where he ties him up at the edge of the street. That's my buddy Heath. And his sisters are also in the movie. So, and also there was the guy, do you remember the scene where they took the picture and the guy with no teeth that's holding the black powder for the camera? You know, and he just kind of has that funny look on his face. He's from my town that I grew up in. And everybody knew who he was. It was so funny to watch that movie. But just kind of an interesting tidbit. But yeah, Hollywood's pretty locked up in terms of its thinking. And one of the things my wife and I have noticed is we'll start watching a TV show. And I have this weird theory, and you tell me if you think I'm correct. But I think the producers and the money machine in Hollywood know that wokeness doesn't sell in the actual plot of a TV show. So what they do, and this is my theory after watching several what I thought were started out as very good shows, Arrow, Blind Spot, and several others, they start out really, really great. for about three seasons. And after three seasons, it's almost like a light is switched on and they go, okay, we've hooked the audience now. Now bring in the woke. And it got so bad with Blindspot in particular, where you'd be watching and there would be these people that would sort of characters that would pop on, and they were inevitably, it was like they were trying so hard to be diverse that it was comical, right? Like, you know, I have absolute support for diversity across society, but it was like they were trying so hard with the things that they said and the way that they scripted it and the characters that suddenly appeared in the show that you were like, wait, that doesn't make any sense to the plot. And it's like, it's almost like they said, well, once we hook the audience, we'll get the money because they'll stay with us once we hook them. And then we can go and we can do our politics. That's literally what it feels like with TV now. Like, writing is pretty much dead in terms of actual serious, let's write this for the art. And however the story turns out, it turns out. But instead, they're now writing the story so that it turns out a specific way and specific diversity markers are met, and the plot becomes secondary to actually achieving that sort of woke formula, if you will.
You know, I don't know if it's as delineated as you discussed, but I think you're onto something in that perhaps the showrunners, the people behind the scenes, realize that they can't start at the, they can't kind of open up a scene or a series or an episode with the woke, that they had to kind of get you involved, engaged, and then you will be, as a viewer, more forgiving. And I think about the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've seen 10 years of movies. It's been mostly woke-free. It's been mostly very entertaining and engaging. It's making a gazillion dollars, and that's a rough estimate. And now they've got us locked in. We will see any MCU movie possible. It doesn't matter who's in it, what's in it. Now they're going woke. Now they're addressing diversity. So in that case, I think that they kind of were able to say, okay, we've established what we want to do. We've got a huge fan base. They will follow us forever for quite some time. Now we have the luxury to be kind of be a message machine. And so it's, you know, whether it's they're literally thinking that, or maybe halfway in they go, oh gosh, we're in a position now we can kind of send a message. But here's the bottom line, and it's your picking up too. We're not talking really about politics. It's, as a viewer, you notice when something isn't organic to the story.
Correct.
It jumps out at you. It may be a character making a speech instead of having a dialogue. You just know deep down in your core that something isn't quite right. This is not being told in a way that's kind of pushing the story forward, or there's a real purpose behind it. And well, you know, I look back to like the old zombie movies, like Dawn of the Dead. Where the director's got zombies walking through a mall. It's a commentary on consumerism,
right?
But it's not hitting you over the head. It's a very subtle, sly, really kind of black humor look at the way we act in our culture.
Right.
And I say bring it. Even if I'm not a fierce anti-consumer guy, you know, I think it's interesting. I think it makes the story more compelling. So even if I don't agree with the message, I can kind of cheer on the artistic attempt to kind of make us think, to kind of push us out of our comfort zone without distracting from the fact that, oh my gosh, it's zombies. They're going to eat the main characters. You know, as long as that's in focus, I'm good. You know, that's fine. You're making us think. You're making something more sophisticated. But otherwise, it's what you're saying. You sense it. It's wrong. It doesn't really make sense. And you're taken out of the experience.
Well, and understand, I'm not criticizing diversity in film. Yeah, it's absolutely. I love to see diversity, but you know, in the natural world, you know, you have great actors. Guys like let's take Will Smith for instance, who was masterful in Legend. I Am Legend, masterful in that movie. He owned the entire movie. He was practically the entire cast, right? Except for zombies, and yet he just mastered it because Will Smith is one of the great actors of my life, right? He's one of those guys that has the ability to do some amazing things. And everything in that movie felt organic and natural, like you said. So again, I'm not criticizing in any way, shape, or form diversity in film. What I am criticizing is when the people that make the shows take themselves so seriously as to think that we're so dumb to not catch on that what they're doing is lecturing us rather than telling us a story. You know,
and there's another angle to this, though. There's a new show coming soon called Borderline. It's a romantic comedy. It's a TV show on ABC, I believe. And it's about a couple that meet, they fall in love, and I think she is a Hispanic character, and I think she's deported. So it's all about sort of their romance, how they're very different, how the deportation is going to impact them. So what they're doing with that show, and this is a different version of what we're talking about, is they're making a sort of undocumented illegal immigrant into part of the fabric of the show.
Right.
Someone that you want to like, someone that you want to root for, and I'm assuming someone you want to say, oh, I hope that she gets together with this guy. I hope they fall in love and they're happy. That's, you know, it's why we watch a rom-com.
Right.
So that's another way that Hollywood sent a message, and that isn't necessarily woke on the like sort of in play, but the theme is there. And then I always mention Joe Biden, because Joe Biden said, you know, shows like Will and Grace really opened the door for gay marriage, and I think he's absolutely right, because, you know, taking any individual episode, it was just about a charming woman and her gay best friend.
Right.
But you know, that enters our house every week. And we get to know the characters and fall for the characters and care for the characters. And then all of a sudden, if we don't have any gay friends in our lives, they go, oh, you know, that Will guy seems kind of nice and friendly.
Right.
And like, that's how, you know, Hollywood can impact and influence the culture. And I have no problem with gay marriage.
Yeah.
That's my, you know,
well, I have no problem with that, actually, because I thought Will and Grace was a great show because it had a great story. And to your point, the story you described is kind of an interesting storyline, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not as though it's not a real storyline. It's not as though I have a friend who married a woman from Brazil and couldn't get her over here. You know what I mean? And it was just like, okay, there's a real storyline there that real people face. I think that's a little bit different than some of, like you said, the lectures and the down talks. And another perfect example of it was, I love the movie series. I don't know how you feel about it, but I love the Oceans series from the very original all the way through the ones that Clooney and Brad Pitt did. And then I heard they were going to do Ocean's 8, and I was like, okay, what's this about? Oh, it's going to be a bunch of women that are going to run, you know, this sort of thief ring. And I was like, okay, Ocean's is a comedy. The ironic comedy here is that this would never happen, right? Typically, if you look at criminal activities, the vast majority of the organized criminal activities come from men, right? Because that's just typically what we choose. Doesn't mean women can't be effective mobsters, but they typically aren't, you know? And so I thought, well, that's the ironic humor of this. I'll give it a shot. 5 minutes in, I was out, because it was not funny. It was a group of women trying to copy the same chemistry and hilarity that Brad Pitt and George Clooney achieved in developing those characters through those three movies, and it fell completely flat, even with a great actress like Sandra Bullock in it. I was like, I can't even watch this. This is ridiculous. All this is women can do it too, and that's not the same. You know what I mean? It's like, that's a perfect example of where they try to force something on you, and of course it bombed, because it was so clear that it wasn't organic, you know?
Yeah, and if you made a new, like a fourth Ocean's film, and you had several key female characters as part of the mix, that's perfectly fine too. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're making a movie like that, when you've got a project going on like that, like The Hustle, that was a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I think the sort of the premise going in is, okay, we have a hit project, let's do it with women.
Right.
Instead of being kind of born from a creative place, like, I've got a great story in mind, I've got these amazing characters, I just can't wait to kind of put on the screen. The way the project powers forward is, it's a gimmick.
Right.
It's, we take a popular concept and just switch the sexes. And maybe that was part of the reason why the Ghostbusters reboot was so bad, because there was something else in play. Instead of just saying, hey, we can make a new Ghostbusters, and boy, then Melissa McCarthy, she's funny. Why don't we make her one of the Ghostbusters? I'm like, yeah, cool. And then you kind of go from there. But there's different agendas in place, and sometimes the mission, the message overwhelms the story, and that's, you know, and conservatives are guilty of that as liberals are, but just that liberals tell 98% of the stories.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And they control 98% of big tech too. So let's talk about that.
Oh.
So I got thrown in Facebook jail this last week. And here's what got me in Facebook jail. I don't know. Did I send you the post?
I think you did, but go over it just one more time.
Okay, so basically, I was just saying, you know, my reaction to the whole lockdown culture that's developed under COVID. I was like, look, the best way And I was just criticizing the powers that be for not talking about this. I wasn't saying don't wear a mask. I wasn't saying don't social distance. But I was saying the best way to either fight off or fend off COVID is to eat healthy and exercise. Eat healthier foods, clean foods, and exercise to build your immune system so that you can either fight it off or you can minimize its effect on you. That's essentially what I said on Facebook. Facebook put me in jail for 24 hours for misinformation about COVID. Now, there's a larger agenda at work here because I feel like heading into the election, I feel like there was a very strong effort knowing that most of the votes that show up on election day were going to skew heavily towards Trump the same way the pre-voting skewed heavily towards Biden. And I felt like that there's a bit of an effort here on the part of the media to essentially do as much as they can to scare as many in-person voters away from the polls as possible, because there was like a ratcheting up of the COVID scare tactic rhetoric. And the truth of this virus is that it's going to be with us probably forever. Humans have faced viruses our entire lives. We're going to have to get used to it. We're going to have to get immune to it. And we're going to have to work through it. The bottom line is 99.6% of people are going to survive it. And, you know, we can keep our elderly home and do some basic things. But I didn't even get into all that. And they threw me in jail. And I felt like there was a real concerted effort. There is a real and today, Twitter today is actually deleting a post that's going around that from people that I trust in the media that shows Michigan finding 138,000 votes and 100% of them going to Biden. There's a graphic of it. And it's a screen capture from one of the race tallying sites. And Twitter is literally deleting that every time somebody posts it. And I tweeted out and I added Twitter. I was like, hey, if Twitter feels responsibility to delete this or to censor this, why do they not feel a responsibility to explain why it's wrong? Because it's a screen capture from one of the vote tallies. Right. So why not put up something that says, hey, this is wrong and here is why? You know what I mean? So there's this effort, I think, and this Loctite control that the left has on social media. And I guess I would make this one point. Social media has become like a utility. It has now, whether you like it or not, even though it's run by private companies, it is in fact a public forum. And the product that they offer is a public forum. And in fact, we're actually the product that they offer to their advertisers, but it is a public forum. And so I think the First Amendment is beginning to be a part of the application here. Do you not?
Yeah, you can't just say it's a private company, full stop. It's much, much more than that. I want to share a quick thought. I was talking to a filmmaker a few months back about a movie he created about China and about a propaganda effort that the country put out, and the details are not important, but the conversation that we had was, I think, and the one thing he said that was so interesting was when he was dealing with China and dealing with the suppression and dealing with the issues he went through, a lot of times what will happen is they will basically delete something, cancel something, say what you did was wrong, or just somehow offer a very vague message where you're being blocked. And the vagueness is the real kicker. Because basically what they're saying is they don't want you to know exactly what you did wrong. Mm. They want you to be so fearful that you will avoid doing almost anything the next time. Because you know that if you do A, B, or C, one of those three could be wrong, could put you in Facebook jail, could put you in jeopardy with the Chinese government. And that's what these social media outlets do. They will ban you, they will censor you, they will put you in Facebook jail. And very often, there is little to no transparency. And you're left thinking, okay, was it that sentiment, or was it that sentiment, or was it this sentiment? Mm-hmm. And once you fear that, the next time you're on Facebook, and if you don't want to get censored, you avoid all three.
Right.
So you don't go in any of those directions. And that's how they censor us. That's how they clamp down on what the conversation is. And listen, when it comes to COVID, there are so many angles. There are so many conversations. It is still so new. There are many, many things that are uncertain. And yes, I read study after study saying vitamin D is actually really good. It either, you know, it either helps you fight it off. It may make sure you don't get it. That's out there. Why should that be censored? Why should you being healthier and taking more supplements and preparing your body for a possible exposure? How is that bad?
Right.
But they do want us to be generally afraid. They want more control. The more that we're cowering, the more power the government has, the more power big tech has, and they like it. So whether we can go down the conspiratorial path about the election, which is possible, or just say they like us to be afraid. They like us to be worried about what we do or say.
Yeah.
And they're keeping us on our heels. That's ultimately the big message and the big effort toward keeping us silent.
I think what you brought up about the importance of that conversation is something worth pointing out. Again, you said that it's about the vagueness of it. Let me just read to you. When I got out of Facebook jail, this is the message I got from Facebook. The messages were coming in red that I had been banned for 24 hours. Then they were yellow. And I got a note. It said account status, account warning. Your account may be restricted again if you violate again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. They put me in jail for 24 hours, and then now I'm apparently on probation. Okay.
Right.
This is the most
like Animal House.
Right. What is it? Secret, double secret, top secret probation. Yeah. This is the most dystopian thing I could potentially imagine. It's very much like the movie The Circle. Did you see that? Wasn't that great a movie, but the point they were making I thought was really good. It was about a tech company.
Was that Tom Hanks and Emma Watson?
Yep.
The
movie had so much potential, it just kind of fizzled and died. But the point they were making was spot on, and this is where I feel like I'm at now. Because here's the thing, and I posted this a little bit ago on Facebook. Ironically, they didn't censor this, but I was like, if you think what I posted is bad and wrong and so horrible, delete it. Fine, delete it. But what is the point of putting me in jail for 24 hours and then saying, you may be punished again? I'm not a child, right? Either what I posted goes against your community standards, which I apparently agreed to in some 40 or 50 pages of legalese that I signed when I jumped on Facebook, or it doesn't. Who gives you the right to now be my overlord parent who not only just takes down my post, but also makes an attempt to make me feel bad for what I did? That's the entire dystopian nature of how that whole thing plays out. They don't just delete it. They make you feel bad about what mm-hmm. you did. And this kind of ties into what you were saying. And that to me is taking it a step farther than saying, we're a private company. We have a right to control what's on our forum. Sure you do. But you don't necessarily have a right to, look, say it or don't say it. But you don't have a right to necessarily come in and now try to manipulate my emotions based on what I wrote on the site. That to me is shows that there's a sinister aspect to this beyond just trying to control what's up on the board.
Couldn't agree more. And by the way, whenever Jack Dorsey is hauled before Congress, one of his favorite things to say is, "We're going to try to be more transparent now,"
right.
And they're never more transparent. And by the way, the movie I was referencing was called Ask No Questions. It came out earlier this year. It's a documentary about a group of, I think it's Falun Gong is the group of it's a Chinese spiritual movement, and the Chinese government hates it. Mm-hmm. And there was an event where a group of the practitioners set themselves on fire in the public square, killed themselves as an act. And basically what the government did was they said, well, see, this is why you can't follow this practice. This is why they're wrong. This is why they're evil. So they used that event to kind of to set up propaganda against the group. But what the documentary is saying, they think it was all staged and faked, and that it wasn't really, because the practitioners don't believe in suicide. This is not sort of akin to what they do. It doesn't make sense. But they had an insider who knew kind of the ins and outs of the TV broadcasting industry within China. He's worked in that arena. And he said that he saw a lot of the hallmarks of how they twist reality in that story. So it's a fascinating documentary. It's well told. But it was me talking to the particular, I think it was the director or producer of the film, that kind of brought up that conversation.
That's fascinating. So where do you think this goes? Because I don't see a solution. On the media side, the media is the media, and you can always start another TV network, right? And if the listeners and the viewers are out there, they're out there. Same with radio. Social media is different because its algorithms are designed to addict you and then come in and do... Because this is going back to what I was saying about manipulating my emotions regarding this. Their assumption is Leland Conway is addicted to Facebook. Therefore, we can play with his emotions. I mean, this is like a bad relationship, you know, where one side of it has all the power. And being upset about this, I've had people say to me, "Well, go to Parler." Any startup competing social media group always gets labeled by the mainstream media and the big tech giants as an extremist platform for white supremacists. That's what it gets labeled. And then it gets taken out from that perspective. So there's this really dysfunctional relationship that the American people have with social media, which tells me it's not going to be solved, because even politicians who may have the legal right to regulate these big tech companies, can you imagine any politician actually winning any election in today's America where the major social media platforms ban them from that platform?
Yeah, and you know, and also the Parlers of the world may take years and years to build up to the point where they can even compete with Twitter. I mean, right. It just doesn't happen overnight, too. But we're in scary times. And listen, you know, for someone like me, I could say, well, I'm going to quit Twitter and Facebook, but I run a small business, and my business is a website, and my website, you know, needs the traffic from Twitter and Facebook. I need to build relationships on Twitter and Facebook with my fellow conservatives.
Right.
So it isn't, for me, it isn't like, oh, I could just quit. It's more complicated than that. And, you know, so, and also if you quit Twitter tomorrow, you're kind of missing out on a lot of conversations. You're kind of not connecting with people. You may not get information as quickly as other people. I mean, they are like utilities. I mean, why is President Donald Trump on Twitter? Because he knows that he can reach millions of people with a couple of button clicks. It's just, it's not like the old days. And I don't know what the exact solutions are, but part of it is that I just wish that Hollywood and the media would take free speech seriously, but they don't, because right now they view big tech and the media's suppression as good because it's on their side, and they don't have the foresight to realize eventually it will come back on them. Either they don't realize that's how history works, or they don't care, or they'll figure that out when it happens.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that concerns me, I view it now, I essentially view social media as a utility because of the what they offer as a product. And again, I've had a lot of Democrats and my libertarian friends, because I lean libertarian, who are like, it's a private company, going back to this whole thing about starting a competitor. Again, it's not the same. Can you imagine if AT&T decided that what I was telling my family about diet and exercise was wrong and thus cut off my conversations with them, and then told me I couldn't call my family for 24 hours, no matter what happened in my life? You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, that's not... Yeah. And some people are like, well, they leave. Look, the bottom line is the product that's being provided is a communication forum. And here's the way I look at it. And I said this the other day. And part of the problem is, I don't know if it's been made clear. It needs to be. I think one of the solutions is to make it clear to social media companies, you are not responsible for anything that is said on your platform, regardless of how extreme it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
Those people who say those extremes are responsible for what happens to them as a result of what they say. But you as a company are not responsible for what they say. I think that's point number one, because we don't hold AT&T responsible if somebody plots a crime over the phone, right? The other aspect of this is kind of when you, again, you look at the sort of utility aspect of it, I think that's where the regulation, I actually don't want to regulate Twitter and Facebook. I want to actually do the opposite. And I want to say, look, you're not responsible for what's said. Because I feel like if you decide as an individual, I am responsible for this one thing that Leland Conway said, therefore I'm going to take it down, then you're now responsible for everything everyone said. And is that really a thing that Twitter and Facebook want to wade into?
Yeah. And by the way, I think if Jack Dorsey came out and said, you know what? I don't like conservatives. I don't like you, Senator Cruz. I don't like what you think. I don't like what you say. And darn right, I'm going to ban you on Twitter when I can. at least he would be honest, and then everyone who's conservative would say, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
We're off the platform. You just right. lost half the country.
Right.
And they would suffer. So they're playing a tap dance where, whoa, no, we don't treat people differently. We want transparency, and boy, this was just an algorithm mistake and we fixed it. No. You're lying to us. We right. know you're lying to us. We can see it. You know, I track celebrities all the time. Who gets punished more? The insane far left kooks of Hollywood or James Woods?
Right. Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I track this stuff all the time. There's hate. There are threats. There's violence. There's ugliness coming from people, sort of the worst in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And yet James Woods comes out and says something maybe strident.
Yeah.
He's banned. He's off for a while. Go take a seat.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Have you seen The Social Dilemma on Netflix?
I have.
What are your thoughts?
It's certainly very interesting. In ways, it doesn't kind of go far enough.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly eye-opening and something that people should see. What's your take on it?
Okay, I feel like, well, first of all, it was good. I agree with you. I think everyone should watch it because I think it's a start. I don't think it's a finish. I 100% agree with your take that it doesn't go far enough. In fact, I got so angry watching it that I didn't understand why they didn't go farther. There's no solution in it. It's just a guy who's talking about his new business, the humane side of technology. But then again, my thought when the documentary wrapped up, when I heard part of Tristan, and Tristan is a very interesting guy, Tristan Harris. He was, mm-hmm. What do they call it? An ethicist for Google, which is hilarious. When I was kind of watching, you know, they were wrapping it up with his final comments and speech and stuff. And I was like, well, what's the point here? You have this company, the Humane Side of Technology or whatever, Center for Humane Technology. And I'm like, you're just another guy in the tech business I'm going to have to trust. So what makes your ethics better than Google's don't be evil ethics or Facebook or Jack Dorsey's, you know, at Twitter? What makes your ethics better than the other ethics that are out there? So mm-hmm. I walked away from it going, this is hopeless because because like you, I run a business that is dependent on the public platform that's offered by Twitter and Facebook. And I walked away from that going, damn, everybody's manipulated and everybody's addicted. And the problem we now have is, can you imagine, let's say you have a town, I don't know, let's just say Castle Rock, Colorado, and half the people in the town are addicted to some drug, and there's only one dealer of that drug. And all the people realize that one dealer is gouging them or he's doing something to them that's not cool. All of those addicted people go, we're going to boycott the one dealer in town. Is that going to work?
Yeah.
It's not.
It's also this Netflix documentary is something I think parents should watch with their kids, especially the teenagers. Yeah. My kids are 9 and 11. They're just sort of dipping their toe into digital living. And there's a lot of lessons to be taught there. And I don't know how school should do it. Like, it seems like a tricky thing to teach. But boy, oh boy, I mean, parents have to be on top of this.
Yeah.
And teach them what to do, what not to do, the limits they need to have. It is a wasteland, and it is terrifying at times. So people need to be fully armed with information.
What concerns me, and maybe this is a broader conversation for another day, but what concerns me the most about social media, beyond the censorship, to be honest with you, because, you know, what was funny about my post was I was actually doing one of those annoying food pictures. I had a recipe for a chicken dish and I posted it up, and then I decided to go on a rant about how eating these clean organic foods will make you healthier, they'll you know, improve your immune system, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was what's funny. It's like, it was ironic that I know food pictures are annoying. Well, apparently mine was so annoying that it got banned by Facebook. But I think the fear that I have, even beyond the censorship, is what the addiction to social media is doing to an entire generation of young minds. And I made this comment earlier, and we can combine this with both topics that we've tackled, this and sort of the cancel culture, woke, whatever, hysteria. We are raising, and I've made this comment, it was very controversial when I said it, but I said the next generation of young people, or the current very young generation, are not going to accomplish very much in terms of serious contribution to humanity as a whole, not because they're not plenty of brilliant minds, there are, but because this entire generation is being raised with a set of obstacles we never had to deal with, And that is, they are being raised in cancel culture and also addicted to social media, where they are not learning interconnectivity, human skills, human communication skills, while at the same time being burdened with the fear of essentially social imprisonment for anything they say or do that breaks from whatever the established norms are supposed to be. And it becomes almost impossible to innovate in that environment. And so I'm very concerned about what the next generation will even be able to accomplish when you look at anxiety numbers, rising depression numbers, inability to communicate with each other numbers. You start looking at those statistics, and social media's imprint becomes far more serious than just Twitter, you know, whether or not they're censoring conservatives.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So it's a disheartening conversation, but it's one we need to have, and it's one that is going to... I almost think that the few sane, balanced souls, if we can kind of raise those kids, are going to have a great advantage over everyone else, because they'll be all, knuckled under by PC and fear of challenge and fear of taking new opinions in and learning from them. And then the few kids who actually were brought up in an old school fashion, they just got to soar and just zoom past their peers because they're able to do all those things.
But their peers will be in control. You know what I mean? I mean,
that's true.
That's the fear thing. Yeah. Is like, how can you innovate? Yeah. And when you destroy media, when you destroy meritocracy, all of those tools that we're used to being raised with in terms of how to succeed in life go away. We're getting into deep water territory here. We should probably have another conversation on that. Let me go back to real quick before we wrap up. I just want to go back to your comment about, you know, you were talking about TV and especially in China. And there is an effort by Chinese companies to fund a lot of what's going on in Hollywood. Do you think there's a connection there to the left leaning of the media connected to the amount of funding that's coming from China?
What happens in Hollywood is that Hollywood will appease China in any way possible, so they get access to the markets.
Uh-huh.
That's the main mission there.
Right.
So you will see positive portrayals of Chinese characters. You will see positive Chinese themes, and you will never ever see anything negative about China.
Right.
So I think, from a Hollywood point of view, that's the bulk of it. I think Hollywood's progressive streak is more organic and natural to the industry, and it kind of feeds upon itself. And often they will create product that they either think may fail or fear may fail, but
right.
as long as it gets out there into the public ecosystem, then they don't care, because they've got another Rocky sequel or another superhero movie to make all the money, and they could kind of afford to lose something if they know that their movie about the Clarence Thomas hearing will live on HBO and on different platforms. You know, I mean, that's
right.
how they kind of feed the culture.
Yeah.
You know, the headlines fade, but the cool movies often don't. They kind of stick around for a while, and they inspire lots of journalists kind of reporting on them and echoing the thoughts. Listen, the new Borat movie is very anti-Trump. And what I see covering Hollywood is that every day there's about 16,000 new stories about Borat, about Sacha Baron Cohen, about the themes of the movie. So that's kind of part of how this works. Hollywood makes a product. If it aligns with its worldview, the media kind of doubles and triples down on it, and it gets massive wide scale of exposure.
Right.
That's how it works.
Right. Right. Is the media has always been left leaning, like you said, it's organic to, you know, the world of thespians, I guess. They're more relational, emotional, which tends to lead to more left wing thinking, I guess. That's a broad stereotype of Hollywood, but it's probably pretty accurate. Is there a way to salvage it or coexist with it? You know, like where, you know, conservative actors can act again. I mean, I don't think anybody's asking, let's make all of Hollywood conservative again. Let's just let some very good actors who've made the mistake of coming out and saying they're voting for conservatives still be able to act, because we still love them. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Is that salvageable?
The industry is very monolithic and getting more so by the day. What we're seeing now is that some projects are working around the system. Just in the last few months, we've had some really good documentaries like Uncle Tom, The Plot Against the President, What Killed Michael Brown, which is outstanding. Everyone should see that one. So there are ways, because of technology, where you don't have to kind of go to Hollywood, knock on the big golden door and say, I want you to make my movie. You can kind of go around the system a bit. Hmm. And I think that's what needs to happen. You know, the movie God's Nail from a couple of years ago, that was a crowdfunding movie. And the series The Chosen, which is a faith-based one, it's quite good, by the way. I saw season one.
Yeah,
that was a massive crowdfunding success. I know a lot of right-of-center comic book artists who are really kind of killing it on the crowdfunding front because people will support that. So I think that will help the few right-of-center artists, but I think in theory, maybe that will put pressure on Hollywood to say, gosh, if we maybe cater to the right of center crowd, you know, half the country, mm-hmm. we actually could make a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's enough of a message to kind of force their minds, to change their minds, but you think it would help. But we shall see. Listen, every late night show is left of center or aggressively show. It's a no-brainer that if you put a really smart, funny right of center comic on a show, that he or she would crush it. Like Fox News crushes it on the ratings against all the competition.
Well, last man standing. They're trying to get rid of it, but they can't because it keeps popping up because everybody loves the damn show. You know?
Yeah. So, funny. You know, you have to have good stuff. If they put a late night show and it's conservative and it stinks, then, you know, I'm not going to watch it because it stinks.
Right.
But if you put a good product out there that's right of center and you've got 20 other shows that are left of center, you don't think that's going to draw a huge crowd?
Right.
I mean, it'd be huge, I think.
Right. I totally agree.
But they don't want to do that. They'd rather have the narrative. They'd rather have the landscape. They'd rather tell the jokes that they want to tell. And what's happening now in our comic culture, the Babylon Bee is amazing. It is like the Onion, but funny and sharp and unpredictable and just great. And what happens to them? Well, Snopes fact checks them. Facebook puts them in jail. USA Today has routinely fact checked Babylon Bee stories. One was... I think the late Justice Ginsburg's death was overruled. Like it was just absurd humor but making a point, and they had to fact check it. So that's what happens when right of center souls try to enter the comedy arena. They get attacked.
Yeah.
And I remember a while back when Obama was in the White House, there were one or two sketches on SNL that were critical of him. They got fact-checked by, I think it was CNN and the Washington Post. Fact-checked.
Right.
Did you ever see a fact-check about Alec Baldwin playing Trump on Saturday Night Live?
Nope.
I get to see that.
Nope. Well, in fact, SNL, when Obama was first elected, they said, we're not going to make fun of him. And then eventually...
they kept their word.
Yeah, for the most part. And then eventually, like you said, it was a couple that slipped out, and then they got fact-checked for that. Fact-checking the Babylon Bee is just making a clown of yourself. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm like, it is a satire site, you idiots.
Well, you know, I just talked to the CEO of the Babylon Bee, and I know it sounds funny, but he was not happy to talk to me. Not because he didn't want to talk to me, but he didn't want to talk about the subject because, you know, his website... you know, needs Facebook. A lot of their traffic comes from Facebook.
Right.
They are existing with Facebook. And if Facebook says, you're pushing fake news, we can't trust you, they could go out of business.
Right.
And they're just trying to make us laugh. They're trying to be satirical. Now, you'd think that every major artist, maybe every comedian, the Dave Chappelle's, the Chris Rock's of the world, they'd come out and say, listen, leave the Babylon Bee alone. They're doing good stuff, but they're our fellow comedians.
Right.
How dare you?
Right.
But they don't do that.
Yeah, they wish they would.
Right up center.
Yeah, you wish that they would. One Hollywood writer that I think has figured it out, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, but have you been watching Yellowstone?
You know, I have heard so many good things about it, and it is hugely popular, and I just haven't been able to catch up with it. I'm dying to, though, for all the reasons.
And I would recommend pretty much anything Taylor Sheridan has done. Wind River.
Excellent.
Excellent movie.
Hell or High Water.
Yeah, Hell or High Water. The Sicarios are dark. All of his stuff is dark. He has a very dark outlook on things. But the Wind River had some real eye-opening stuff. I grew up on an Indian reservation, and he grew up with a lot of Native American friends, grew up in West Texas. He really stuck to it in that movie in terms of it was a great Hollywood plot, but the underlying theme was real. And what's interesting is he does that with Yellowstone, in my opinion. He figures out, I don't know how he does this. It's like he figures out a way to make you love evil people and hate evil people too. And it's like, But he tells the story from all the sides of the story. And I'm like, if Hollywood could just do this more, right? Like you're understanding that the Dutton Ranch has done a lot of wrong things to keep their land, but you're understanding how they're fighting against forces that are also doing wrong things. And then there's the Native American aspect of it and how their original, you know, it's really deep and it's good stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I miss that about Hollywood, really diving into these controversial, hard to discuss, multi points of view stories and finding a way to make us love all the characters. It's fascinating. And he does.
Yeah. If you're making a movie and you've got a liberal hero against a conservative villain, fine. But if you make the liberal hero interesting and complex and nuanced, and then you make the conservative cartoonish and one-sided and villainous, it's not that interesting.
Right.
You're better off making both characters compelling and profound.
Right.
And thoughtful and unexpected, because that's better storytelling.
Right.
And if you want to send your message you want to send, okay, make it more nuanced, make it more balanced, make it smarter, make it sharper. You're going to come out with a better story, but they often don't do that. No, there are lots of examples of good storytelling where they balance things out and they flesh it out, but it's storytelling 101, and they often ignore that.
Yeah, well, and it's also a more real way to tell a story, because that's how everyone's lives actually work. You have your point of view, and I have mine. And
I bet you every Tony Soprano viewer on The Sopranos, the show, wanted him to live at the end of that series. Remember when it faded to black, and no one knew what the heck happened?
Right.
He's a killer. He's a monster. But we got to identify with him in fascinating ways, and I think we didn't want him to die.
Right. Absolutely. Well, your website, HollywoodInToto.com. I highly recommend it. I read it regularly. It kind of helps me get a good idea of what I should see, what I shouldn't see, what I should, you know, really how I might want to watch for things and look at different things. And it's really great stuff, and you do a good job of diving into it. Are there other ways people can also find you? I know you're on Twitter and Facebook as well.
Yeah, you know, the best way is to track me on Twitter. I'm at Hollywood in Toto. And I've been doing a lot of writing for The Daily Wire. And I also have another mini project for The Daily Wire, which I will tease but not say more of. But that should be kind of coming soon. But I'm kind of doing a lot more with that website. But Hollywood in Toto remains my home base. And it's updated 7 days a week. Once in a blue moon, I take a day off, but I don't do it too often, and I try to keep it hopping.
Awesome. Well, it's good talking to you again. Thank you for taking some time with us. We appreciate you, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a great one. Christian Toto, HollywoodInToto.com, and The Daily Wire. Love that guy. He is very insightful, and if you're not putting Hollywood in Toto on your favorites, you're missing out. I want to say a big thank you to our sponsor, Louisville Cabinets and Countertops, again for helping out with the program. As you know, I only talk to you about companies that I actually believe in and I've worked with. And that is the case with Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. They did our kitchen and we loved it. We enjoyed it for several years. And then when we sold it and moved to Colorado, sold our house, it sold in 8 hours. And I think a big part of that was how beautiful the kitchen was, thanks to Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. So I just want to encourage you, if you're thinking about, you know, maybe you're going to stick around because economic times are uncertain with the outcome of the election, whatever. So you're going to stick around in your house and maybe not sell and buy another one, but you want it to be what you always wanted it to be, then I highly recommend Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. Or maybe you are trying to sell and you want to make it the best way to sell possible. You gotta update some things, and so they are also great for that. Now, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, they've got cabinets in stock, and they're affordable and they're local. So you can literally check them out. Go to the showroom at 6200 Hit Lane, right on the border of Oldham County. So if you're in Southern Indiana, Oldham County, or Louisville, they're your folks. If you want to do a turnkey kitchen remodel, meaning you sit down with one of their three designers and you tell them what you want, and then they come in and just do it all for you, that is also something that they do and specialize in. The phone number is 502-930-3304. Just talk to one of the designers over there, Michelle, Kelly, George. They'll take good care of you. And again, go to Louisville Cabinets and Countertops.com. Thanks to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, Kentucky for their help with this program. JP Web Design, my co-host and co-executive producer, Cameron Mills. We appreciate him as well. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, it's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. You can download us for free wherever podcasts are found at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and iHeartRadio's app. And you can also hear select episodes on WGTK 970, The Answer, in Louisville, Kentucky. So thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway. It's The Disruption Zone.